Welcome to a CICM podcast, with this episode featuring Menzies. Today we'll be focusing on Long Live the CVA. I will now hand you over to Giuseppe.
Thanks, Tom. Hi, my name's Giuseppe Parla. I'm a senior manager at Menzies Business Recovery Team. I'm joined today by Simon Underwood, partner of our team, and Caroline Davenport, a manager. Today, we're going to be covering off a podcast regarding the company voluntary arrangements. In short, I'll abbreviate that to CVAs just to make it easier. The CVAs came about in the 1986 Act. It is a recovery procedure that's available to companies to form an agreement between themselves and their creditors. So it's a compromise of the debt in order for the entity to continue to survive. But the question I think we all need to ask ourselves is, why should it survive? So it needs to demonstrate really that it won't happen again. And later on, Simon will take us through what a good CVA should look like. Just some basics really. A company voluntary arrangement will require creditors approval of 75% for those in person or by proxy. And if it has any rejections, then if it's over 50% of those that are unconnected, it will not go into a company voluntary arrangement. The document pack that you will receive is ordinarily received with a nominees report. That's to ensure that the proposals put to creditors are fit, fair, and feasible. One of the most important parts of the document that I think you should all be aware of and look out for is the comparison statements. So that's where a CVA is compared to another form of insolvency, whether that be, for example, an administration or a creditor's voluntary liquidation. So that's showing us perhaps why this is the most viable and suitable option for the company and its creditors. And it helps us obviously decide on how to vote. Historically, CVAs had a very high failure rate, I think it's fair to say. That was perhaps because there was an element of, a better use of the phrase, flogging a dead horse. I think we saw a lot of CVAs that were just proposing perhaps the same thing. So we need to ensure that something new is going to be brought to the table. Why should this company survive, and what's being injected into it to make it a better proposition? In 2014, some standard conditions were introduced, and a bit more of a best practice was required, and that gave everybody a more uniformed approach of a CVA. So creditors were receiving something that looked slightly similar. And then in 2015-16, we saw the rise of landlord CVAs. Now, this was mainly those in the casual dining or retail sector where there were multiple outlets. But Caroline, you've seen a lot of these. What is meant by a landlord CVA?
Thanks, Giuseppe. Yeah, a lot of the CVAs which we've seen in the news recently, such as New Look, Homebase and Pizza Express, are landlord-only CVAs. These are household names in the retail and hospitality sectors that operate from a number of different premises and therefore have a number of different landlords as creditors. Under a landlord-only CVA, just one class of creditors, the landlords, are impacted by the terms of the CVA. All other creditors, such as utility companies, suppliers of stock, and HMRC, continue to be paid in the normal course during the period of the CVA. The CVAs, which we've seen in the news, are usually high street retailers or restaurant chains. They were struggling with rents prior to COVID-19 lockdowns and are now utilising the CVA to correct the high position rents they were paying by securing rent reductions. A landlord-only CVA often includes terms whereby the rent payable to the landlord during the period of the CVA is reduced or payable on a percentage of monthly turnover basis, whilst not compromising the obligations to pay the company's other creditors. landlord-only CVAs also typically split the landlords into subcategories, and the percentage of turnover they receive during the period of the CVA is based on the profitability of that premises. As you've mentioned, for a CVA to be approved, it requires 75% or more in value of creditors voting. This means all creditors owed money at the time the CVA is proposed, not just those impacted by the CVA. In the majority of cases, landlords make up a small proportion of the total debt, so they're routinely outvoted by the suppliers and HMRC, etc., who aren't having their debt compromised in any way.
Sounds a little biased against the landlords. Do they not have somebody that represents them when a CVA is put forward?
They do. The British Property Federation, the BPF, represent a number of the high street landlords and often provide them with advice and assistance when they're faced with a landlord-only CVA proposal. The BPF may also attend the CVA decision meeting on behalf of the landlords. Given the large involvement that the BPF have, they've produced their own 10 red flag clauses, which include the key points of contention that landlords look out for in a CVA proposal, along with their expected best practice guidelines. Included within these red flags are rental discounts that continue beyond the termination of the CVA, rental discounts to less than the market rent, and a company's right to trigger a rent review at the end of the CVA. These red flags demonstrate that the purpose of a CVA is not to vary the terms of the lease and give the company additional rights outside of the CVA, but it's to support the business whilst it's going through tough times and until it can return to profitable trading. Having worked on a landlord CVA recently for a retail store operating from 15 different premises, I've seen how engaging with the landlords and the BPF early on can help to achieve the votes needed to get the proposal approved. For a company that's trading from over 10 different premises, the value of landlord claims could add up and reach the 26% needed to reject the proposal. I should point out though that the calculation of a landlord's claim for voting purposes is not straightforward and usually provides for a deduction to reflect the period to the expiry of the lease agreement. All the arrears that are outstanding to the date of the decision meeting should be included, along with a calculation for dilapidations. But it would be incorrect to allow a landlord to vote for all future rent and service charges due to the expiry of the lease, as it would be expected that if the business was to cease to trade and vacate the premises in a liquidation scenario, the landlord would find a new tenant to occupy the premises before the lease expiry, therefore mitigating their claim. For example, in the New Look CVAs, the landlord's claims were included for voting purposes with a 25% deduction.
Well, that's interesting. So, yes, that's right. Landlords have a duty to mitigate their claim. But going back to recent hearings then, and a lot of landlords have applied to court to challenge the terms of CVAs, how have they been getting on with that?
Yes, they have, and there's been recent judgments on the landlord challenges to both the New Look and Regis CVAs handed down in the last few weeks. Whilst the New Look judgment gave the landlords permission to appeal, the challenges brought by the landlords, which included material irregularity and unfair prejudice, were all rejected. The landlords claimed they were unfairly prejudiced because the required majority at the creditors' meeting was secured with votes from unimpaired creditors. The judge held that a CVA, which provides for different treatment of different subgroups of creditors, is not necessarily unfairly prejudicial, although it might need to be justified. And it's not necessarily unfairly prejudicial to a subgroup of compromised creditors that the majority required to approve the proposal is achieved by the votes of unimpaired creditors. When considering the unfair prejudice points, the judge considered that on a vertical comparison, the landlords would be worse off under an administration, and the differential treatment on a horizontal comparison was therefore justifiable. The landlords also claimed the various modifications to the terms of the leases were unfair. However, the judge held that the threshold for fairness was that under the terms of the CVA, the landlord should receive the market value of the property and that its contractual right should be interfered with as little as possible. However, all circumstances need to be taken into account when applying this test. For instance, a CVA is not automatically unfair if it reduced rent below the market rent, if the landlord was afforded the right to terminate the lease and re-let to other tenants and it hadn't done so. Given a number of the landlord CVAs have now been tested in court and the outcome of the landlord challenges to both the New Look and Regis CVAs in the last few weeks, it looks like the landlord CVAs are here to stay and we may be seeing some more of them.
Thanks, Caroline. I guess the final question I have, or one of two anyway, what's the impact on the trade creditors? Because that's what I guess our listeners are going to be most interested in.
Well, if the proposal for a landlord-only CVA is approved, it's likely to have minimal impact on trade creditors. However, this is only if the CVA proposal is approved by the required majority. If a CVA proposal is rejected because not enough creditors voted in favour of the proposal, in most cases, it's likely the company may then be placed into a liquidation or administration. This would then impact all creditors, and in most scenarios may result in all creditors only receiving a pence in the pound dividend on their claim, and that's at most. It's therefore important that trade creditors consider the terms of any CVA proposal they receive and complete and return any proxy and proof of debt forms prior to the decision date, rather than just ignoring the proposal because they think it won't impact me. Creditors should also remember that when completing their proxy form, there's an option for the creditors to request modifications to the proposed arrangement, which can then vary the terms of the arrangement if the majority of the creditors voting agree to the modifications.
Okay. So have you seen landlords vote in favour?
Yes, I have. On the recent CVA that I worked on, some of the landlords voted in favour of it. Remember that the benefit of a CVA is that a company continues to trade whilst paying back an agreed portion of the debt owed to the creditors over time. In many cases, it's better for the landlord to have a tenant paying some of the rent and being liable for the rates than having the hassle and the cost of finding a new tenant, completing a refit of the premises, or being liable for empty rates if a tenant can't be found.
That's great. Thanks, Caroline. Really interesting. So CVAs, I guess at the moment in recent times, statistics wise, because of the pandemic, they've been on a fairly low number. We don't know what the SEGA is going to do over the next few weeks. We'll probably find out a little bit more. At the moment, there is a pause on being able to wind up a company up to the 30th of June. So that could change at time of recording. But if that does change, then we feel that CVAs could well be an option, not necessarily just for landlord CVAs, but perhaps for your sole trader. It could be an individual who owns a pub, has the freehold, but has obviously the overhead of a fixed mortgage. So there's fixed costs, there's maybe time to pay arrangements in place that they're struggling to meet whilst they're not quite at full capacity because of the pandemic and the restrictions they've been required to adhere to. So short-term cash flow, high fixed costs, maybe a CVA is a possible solution. And then obviously can be put to creditors to be contemplated whilst it tries to repair its cash flow and balance sheet. Simon, I think over to you now. What you've seen a lot of CVAs in the past. What does a good one look like?
Thank you, Giuseppe. So I think it's worth just reflecting that in recent times, the CVA has sort of risen in popularity for the retail and casual dining sectors in particular, and for businesses which have significant property portfolios. We perhaps need to sort of understand also that there are some other procedures and processes that are becoming available to companies as well in financial distress. The SIGA 2020 Act introduced the moratorium and also the restructuring process. But for my part, we've yet to see any real traction and take up in relation to these new approaches and mechanisms. And I think the challenge is, why would an insolvency practitioner and directors, and more importantly, creditor population, want to engage in something that's new and novel when actually the CVA process, as you've already said, Giuseppe, has been around since 1986, perhaps not used for a number of years and with particular popularity. But in part, that was probably due to some early failures of the initial wave of CVAs following the change in legislation almost 30 years ago. So to answer your particular question, what does a good CVA look like? I think the most important ingredient is that fundamentally there has to be a profitable business. Obviously, there's profitable businesses have had challenges, but the underlying ingredients needs to be that you can turn a profit and make money. Obviously, if you can attribute the financial challenges that a company has to an identifiable reason, then hopefully that challenge can be overcome. And obviously the obvious one at the moment is the impact of COVID and all the challenges that will have had on businesses where they've been unable to trade because they've been subject to closed downs, lockdowns and other challenges. And also the other common scenario is where a company's had a single bad debt event and that in itself has impaired the company's balance sheet. So sticking with the ingredients, we need to be able to understand the challenge and then be able to remove the obstacle, restoring the company to balance sheet solvency. And we're either going to achieve that by reference to the company making funds available by way of monthly contributions that are paid to the supervisor of the CVA, which forms a pool of funds that can then be distributed to the creditors that are compounded under the scheme, or it can be achieved by the introduction of third-party funds. And I think it's fair to say that a number of companies, as we come out of these final stages of lockdown, subject, as Giuseppe has already said, the challenges of coming to press on the novel announcements that we'll no doubt be hearing over the next 7 to 14 days, there's still some challenges to come. And as businesses are starting up again, they're going to have cash flow challenges. And one of the important things that you need to do to be able to address cash flow challenges is have access to working capital. That's either by having third-party money or shoring up your own balance sheet sufficiently that you can then approach either mainstream banking organisations or asset-based lenders to enable the company to raise funds and then continue to trade successfully. So my summary, I guess, is that I think we are going to see CVAs in a wider context than the national retailers and the casual dining entities that we've already talked about. It's great that Caroline has seen firsthand with her day job that there are some smaller retail businesses that are using these schemes already. And as I say, I would add to that that I think that there's going to be non-retail, non-casual dining businesses using a CVA as a mechanism to repair the balance sheet and get back on track. Set themselves up, hopefully, to deal with the challenges that we're coming to shortly.
Yeah, that's certainly my experience in the past. I think I've seen a lot of CVAs that weren't really just for landlords, but I can see a return of that for sure. Just to recap the session, then, really, just make sure you participate in any CVA proposal, no matter how big or small you feel you are. It is important because obviously the overall effect can sway that vote. Very important also is to ensure you're happy with any cash flow. Make sure that's obviously been scrutinized by the nominee, the creditors, because we want to make sure this entity doesn't end up back at square one. And finally, it just leads me to say thank you to Caroline firstly, and then Simon for this session. And if anybody needs any help with any proposals they may receive, or if they feel their company, this may be something for the future, then please, please get in contact with CICM or Menzies. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. If you enjoyed this episode, you can find others like these in the members area at www.cicm.com.